With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of season two of Hometown Glory, your Spurs and Culture podcast. I'm Charlie and thrilled to be joined by Billy, by Rosa and by Tom. Unfortunately, Ash is on some important work business tonight, he tells us, which sounds like he's made it up, but I believe him, I think. And tonight, the guys are going to be humouring me as I ask them my 10 most pressing questions going into the new season. Basically, what some are calling our half-assed take at a season preview. Now, we're also going to have a chat about the Southampton game. Billy will be rolling in the tweets as ever. Rose is going to give us a little Spurs women update during, of course, a momentous week for women's football. And we will also be offering up some culture recommendations as usual. But first, guys, I'm going to launch straight into the questions. Let's dive in. Don't even say hello to you this evening. We're just all business tonight. Question one. I want to know which new signing will prove the biggest hit. And that question goes to you, Billy. You can answer this one first, please.
I feel like I'm just being like totally Captain Obvious, but I think it's just going to be Perisic. Like, that photo of him that he released like 2 to 3 days ago, man, he just looks insane. And like, that's a player that Arsenal apparently say is an old man. Like, if I look like that when I was an old man, I'd be very, very happy indeed. Like,
is this the photo where he's in some very short shorts in front of a Marilyn Monroe?
Like, it looks like it's almost like a 12-pack or something. It's like, feels like a disservice to call it a 6-pack. Feels like that's not giving it enough credit. It's like, how can you look at that guy and think that he's washed or he's an old man? Like, it's just insane. I just think he's going to like literally hit the ground running and just be insane for us. I think he's going to be straight away a really big player for us. So, yeah, I know it's so Captain Obvious, but yeah, Perisic, 100%.
Okay, you're allowed that one. Tom, who have you got?
The same as Billy, really. He's played for Conte before, obviously, and was very successful playing in Conte's system. He got a very decent amount of assists and goals last season, I think, for Inter. And he's clearly the kind of wing back that Conte has wanted for that system for a while, i.e. the wing back who basically plays as a winger, as a forward, is putting in loads of balls. And also, you know, I think what we've been crying out for a while is winners and experience in the team. You know, I've probably said it before, but look at Thiago Silva at Chelsea, who's, you know, been brilliant. And there's other examples of very experienced players coming into teams and just, you know, other players being able to learn from them. I'm excited to see him and see Conte's full wing-back dream realised, at least on one flank. Who knows about the other?
I'm sure we'll get on to our right flank. Rosa, who have you got for this one?
I'm going to preface this by saying I'm going to leave Spence out of it because he's the one I really, really want to succeed, but he is like a precious child and I don't want to put expectations on him. So we're going to leave him out of this. I think it's going to be Richarlison because I think he's so up for it. And I feel like it's time that the curse of the number nine shirt is exorcised. And he's been great for his previous Premier League clubs. I think we also seem to have done really well with like our most recent attacking purchases, I guess. Like if you look at Kulusevski, at least. So I've got like a really good feeling about it. Basically, I've got a good feeling about him. I think he's going to get a lot of good opportunities to make his mark, and especially with the craziness that this season is going to be. So yeah. That's my pick.
I think he's going to be such a fan favourite. I think that first sort of moment at the stadium where he, you know, riles up the opposition, or obviously scores would be nice too, but, you know, just he does something that endears himself, basically being a bit of a shit, I think, in front of us, and suddenly he becomes our shit. I think that's going to be a really nice moment. Yeah. I think we're going to love it.
Love it. Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm really sad he's not available for the Southampton game, but I feel like it's written in the stars that he makes his debut against Chelsea and does something spectacular. So I'm excited about that. That leaves me. I'm going to say Clement Longley. I feel like Ash might have said Longley, and when I knew Ash wasn't here, I thought I'd big up Clement for him. I think he's just going to be one of those low-key signings that he'll be so integral to how we play so quickly that we'll all start stressing about us not having an option to make the deal permanent by like October. And then we'll just get all angsty and be like, why did Spurs not negotiate an option? He's going to be 40 million next summer. This is ridiculous. He'll probably then have some dramatic fall off in form and that sort of stress will disappear. But I can just see him at the very least. I think he'll rotate brilliantly with Ben. And I think that to have two sort of ball carrying centre backs that will be able to really fit in that Conte system will be terrific after, you know, the sort of square peg round holes that we've seen deputised for Davies in the past. I think he's going to be really good. So he's my pick. My second question, bit of a sort of more downbeat one, but which new signing will prove the biggest flop? Rosa, you can go first with this one.
I don't want to pick anyone because I feel so...
You have to. I have I'm to. Sorry. Okay.
All right. I'll tell you what I wrote down is I wrote down Longley just because I was like, he might struggle to adapt. But mm-hmm. But in my notes, I wrote equally, we could have a weird Longley is an amazing success and Richarlison is a horrible flop as well. So I feel like I've kind of had my cake and eaten it too, sort of with that answer. I have a feeling I'm going to love Longley, actually, provided he doesn't take Ben's spot. I just think he's going to be quite classy based on, you know, not very much, except that he comes from Barca. So I hope he doesn't flop, but I feel like that feels like an obvious answer to me, but he might struggle, I guess.
I think he's certainly the signing that people, maybe Fraser Forster aside, have been least excited about. And he obviously had a bit of a dodgy time with Barca. So I think that's totally fair. I also like how Spurs it is, Rosa, that your answers to both those questions you felt were basically interchangeable.
Yeah. I think it's true, though, right?
That captures the roller coaster of excitement and dread that we all attach to new signings. Tom, who's your potential flop, do you reckon, mate?
Well, I just want to talk about backup keepers for a minute because our record...
Oh, do you? Okay, interesting.
Our record with backup keepers has been terrible. And I like Forster a lot. I think he seems like a good guy. He had a good run at Southampton at one point, right? We've kind of been terrible at planning for Lloris, a succession plan for Lloris, right? Gazzaniga, I think briefly, we all thought he was going to be great. He wasn't. Your lad last season, what was his...
Bellini.
Yeah, Gallini. Yeah, he wasn't good when he played either.
Joe Hart, lest we forget.
Joe Hart. And then there's we've had a couple of young ones, like we just mentioned, relatively young. I think Gazzaniga was pretty young. Mm. Anyway, and then the other side of that is Michel Vorm. Again, lovely, seemed like a lovely guy. But you know, he was never, he was, wasn't bought to succeed Lloris at all. So yeah, I think touch wood, Fraser Forster will play in the Cups and play really well and be reliable. But just to point out, our record with backup keepers recently has been utterly atrocious. Yeah, Joe Hart, that was a nightmare. Michelle Vorm.
It was that United semi, wasn't it? Ander Herrera sort of P-rolled a shot under his body in the middle of the goal and
Don't make me go back there. That's one of the most miserable times I think I've ever had as a Spurs fan. And I say that as someone who really quite loved Michelle Vorm as well. I feel like he was hung out to dry a couple of times by Poch. Like, he just shouldn't have been played in those games. It was completely unnecessary. So we've all now got really terrible memories where we shouldn't have.
He was never supposed to play in those matches. You're completely right. It's not his fault. Michelle, if you're listening, we forgive you. It was not your fault. I'll go with mine before we get to Billy. I'm going to go with Spence. And I say this, Billy, were you going to agree? Were you going to say Spence as well?
Yeah, I was going to go for that as well.
Guys, explain yourselves.
I'll explain myself really quickly. I obviously don't want to say this at all. And I'm only saying it because I think it's going to take him a while to get into the team. And I think that the sort of hope and expectation and excitement that there is around Spence from the fans, partly because our right wing backs are, you know, as we were talking about on the last episode, this sort of, you know, comedy Ferris wheel of ridiculous players that just keep rotating round and round. But I just think that Conte's going to take a while before he trusts him, before he feels like he knows the system, before he feels like he's ready for Premier League football. So I think we're all going to be sat there and, you know, it will be the first sort of textbook Emerson Royale performance, the first sort of Doherty kind of perhaps reverting to type performance where everyone will be screaming for Spence to come in and save the day. And I think Conte will be quite stubborn about it and it will take him a while. So that's why I'm going to say Spence. But I think eventually he'll come good. But that's my reasoning. Billy, what's yours?
Yeah, so my reason is literally exactly the same. I don't for any second think that he's going to flop at Tottenham. I just think it's going to take a long time for him to establish himself. Conte vibes and preseason vibes, I actually don't even think he's third choice at the moment. It kind of seems like he might even be fourth choice behind Lucas Moura. So I think it's a while before we're going to see him. I think it'll take like a breakout moment. Like you'll get like some cup game in like the Carabao Cup or something, and you'll have like a storm. And that's what it's going to take to.
Yeah.
Like I say, from the early indicators from preseason, it doesn't even seem like he's third choice at the moment, let alone, you know, getting into the team. So I don't think he's going to flop at Tottenham under any circumstances. That's nowhere near what I'm saying, but I think it's going to be a long time before you start to see him in the team, unless he has that kind of Gareth Bale moment where he has like he just sort of gets chucked in and is incredible. I think it's going to be a while before you see him at Tottenham properly.
He's obviously best mates with Cesc, isn't he? And I worry could be another Sessegnon situation where it takes him kind of 2 years to get any sort of run in the team and you know, potentially he'll be low on confidence. But, you know, fingers crossed he hits the ground running.
Rosa, give us some Spence positivity back.
See, I feel like he's made the move at the right time. Like, I think part of the problem with Cesc is that we waited like an extra year for him, right? So there was just a lot of expectation on him. And then there was a sort of manager situation. Mm. And I think Spence is just coming into a much calmer side. And I feel like what I was worried about last week with the sort of Conte quotes where he was saying, oh, he wasn't my choice, I've decided to like spin that now. And I think it might, like, Conte is actually like potentially protecting him because it is a lot of pressure. But actually, I think he could make an appearance like kind of earlier, really, because I feel like the right back situation is three. He may be fourth choice, but those three are just all like agents of chaos. I think if he can just come in and do like a sensible job, I think it won't take a huge amount.
The bar is low.
It's quite low.
I think on the flip side, I don't want to put a downer on the Spence signing because I think it's a really exciting signing. And I know today, as we record this, we're linked with a Udinese left back. So I think it's quite exciting that maybe, you know, we've got this kind of long-term vision with Antonio Conte involved. And if we have like, if we're buying like young wing backs for the Antonio Conte system and like the quotes coming out of Conte are pretty positive at the moment, I think it's actually a really exciting time to get excited about these young sort of prospective signings that we're actually as a club, planning for a long-term future of Antonio Conte. I know that's something we've been speaking about all of the year, like last year, if he's going to leave, he's going to just get up and leave us. But I think the flip side of the, you know, maybe seeing that Spencer's not going to be in the team straight away is actually thinking we might have like a proper long-term future with Conte, and like that is really something to get excited about.
That leads nicely or otherwise into my next question. What will prompt Antonio Conte's first meltdown of the season? Tom, what do you reckon it will be?
I mean, Emerson Royale, probably.
Just in like, general.
It will certainly prompt my first meltdown of the season, I'm sure.
Well, that's, well, sort of spoiler alert. That's the next, sorry, that's sorry, the next
that,
question.
That is coming. But that's my answer, I think. The Royale, yeah.
Just the first performance of Emerson Royale of the season. Yeah, okay.
Some Rosa? Wayward pass.
Yeah, just one pass will do it. Yeah, okay. Seems accurate.
I think it's when we win at Chelsea only to lose to Wolves the following week.
That feels horribly, horribly accurate too.
I just don't feel like the roller coaster is gonna sort of level out at any point soon, to be honest.
No, I think you're probably right. Billy, your one?
Yeah, I think kind of similar. I think it's going to be like some, we're going to have like a really good result in the group save the Champions League. Then we're going to play like some low block side in the Premier League and like draw 0-0 or something. He's going to go mad and say that, well, you know, we're not in the title race anymore or something like that. I just think like it's a lot to ask already to be like firing in four competitions. It's going to be sort of basically just half-assed. We did a terrible job in most of the competitions last year. So to go from totally, you know, just going straight for top four to now firing on all four competitions, I think it's a big, big ask. And I think we're going to come unstuck somewhere along the line. And when it does happen, he probably will. You know, that's what he's like. That's what Conte is like. That's why we love him. So I think it's going to, it's, our big problem is always going to be against teams that play a low block, but we struggle against that in the Roma friendly. It's probably going to happen at least a couple of times over the season. And when it does, he's probably going to complain about it.
All right. My one, I'm going to say, it's probably inevitable that we don't sign all the players that he actually wants. I think he's reasonably happy, but I also think that he's expecting us to sort of move a few mountains between now and the end of August and get some extra quality and for him to feel like we can really, really compete. But I don't think life always works like that. So I reckon the first press conference after the window shuts, which I think I looked up is, that would be the day after we play West Ham away, which feels like also a bit of a banana skin type match that might not go especially well, which if sort of combined perhaps with us not bringing in a couple of extra players that Conte feels we need could mean we get a real classic bit of Conte meltdown action. So that's what I'm going to predict. I don't want that to happen. I think it probably will. As I sort of teased, my next question, what will prompt your first meltdown? So not Antonio, your first meltdown. Rosa, what do you reckon? What's gonna trip you up first this season?
I like to think that as lily-livered as I am, like my meltdowns generally don't happen until like the latter half of the season. So obviously there will be something.
Rosa, is this true? I'm not sure that this is true based on my my sort of quite long friendship with you now.
Really, name a time when actually, do you know what? Don't. I would say, you know, it'll be when Gentle Ben gets injured, but that's already happened. So, you know,
that's true. Fine. Yeah.
Is he back? Is it all, what's happened there? Just,
I mean, we're recording on Wednesday night. And so they've not had, Conte's not done his presser yet, where he sort of speaks on the injury side of things. So, I think it was a bit 50-50. I'd be shocked if they played him from the start, personally.
That, to be honest, that could be my meltdown because I feel like what might happen is he'll be injured and be out for a couple of games and then I'll have to deal with like everybody saying, oh, well, you know, we don't need him anymore and somebody else will come into the side and do a job and people will be like, that's fine, we don't miss him. And I'll have to go to bat for him like again. And
it's only been 9 years of doing it.
Exactly. And I'm, you guys, I was going to say I'm tired, but I'll do it. So let's go with that.
Okay. I'll do mine quickly. I reckon I worry about a few things. I'm worried about us going to Stamford Bridge and rolling over like we normally do, because I think I'll just sort of flip out a bit in the sense that it's just Spurs doing what they always do at Stamford Bridge. I think I'll probably have a bit of a wobble if Arsenal win their first three or four games and look really good, sort of based on their pre-season form. If they were to turn that into actual real life form, I think I'd start to have one of my Arsenal moments, particularly with everything else going on with that football club right now. I think that could send me over the edge a little bit. So hopefully none of that happens, but basically making myself sound like I'm a mess already, and I'm actually quite confident. So that's not a true reflection of how I'm feeling, but these are the questions that I set myself. Tom, what's yours? When do you reckon your head's going to go?
Well, the aforementioned Emerson Royale, obviously, like some sort of fucking passing between him and Dad or something. I'll lose it. I mean, Tanganga still plays for us as well, doesn't he? Technically,
I think.
Just about, but maybe we'll see him. It could be him and Royale that make me have a meltdown. I mean, me and Linton, who I sit with, there'll often be rows between us where, like, he doesn't agree with me getting on the back of some player or something, and we'll end up rowing. But also, I like to have a meltdown when the neck oil pumps aren't working in the South Stand as well, which is
basically... You do, yeah.
So, I mean, my first meltdown may be triggered by having to drink Amstel. That's what I'll go with.
A pretty fair meltdown. Billy, round us off.
I need to talk about, like, the online shenanigans of Arsenal Twitter fan base. Like, it's already started, like, well into the... In fact, it started, you know... I think we broke them when we finished above them. And the insane ramblings they've gone on this summer is, like, just insane to behold. And I can guarantee you what's going to happen. So I looked at the start of their opening fixture. They've got a really easy, like, opening five games. They'll probably win all five of them. And you'll get some Arsenal Twitter thread that'll be like, how Mikel Arteta has changed Premier League football forever. Tweet one of 76 or something like that. And it's just going to drive me insane. But they're already talking about, like, pre-season. They're already talking about how their signings have basically made them equivalent to Man City. Like, just have some shame as a fan base. You bottled, like, the biggest top four race that we've had together in ages. And you were like, just couldn't have bought it anymore. But they're still going on as if they finished above us. They've won the transfer window. They've won pre-season. Just, like, have some shame as a fan base. So the online shenanigans of Arsenal is definitely what's going to send me over the edge. As you can hear, it probably already has a little bit.
Don't let them win.
You know, I'm almost impressed with the lack of shame. There's something about it where I just think, that's incredible, guys. Like, they absolutely bottled it so bad. They choked at our stadium, and then they choked again at Newcastle. And it's like it just never happened. They've just, like, breezed right on past it. I can't lie. There's a part of me that is slightly in awe of that attitude. And I feel like...
Is it because you think that had it been the other way around, we would have spent the summer in the depths of despair?
And there would be... I would still, you know, I haven't got over things that happened, you know, 10 years ago with Tottenham. And it's just... I can't imagine it. I can't imagine being like that. So... There's a part of me that is, you know, I'd sort of admire it, and I'm slightly envious of it in a way. I think it's just, I don't know how you get like that. It's, like, remarkable, really.
It's a bit like being jealous of really sort of stupid people that just breathe through life without too many worries, because their mind
imagine
is...
Imagine not having that massive, like, imagine not being just totally neurotic.
I can't.
I simply can't.
I was today loving the video of their club photographer giving the team talk. Like, what the fuck? Imagine Conte being like, where's the photographer? Get him in.
Imagine him letting the photographer in the room. Like, just...
Get Jill in from the CAF. She's going to give the team talk today.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about... I know we're going to talk about this a lot over the next few weeks, because I know none of us have watched it yet, but, like... The cult of Arteta is insane. It's like he gave this rousing, like, all the Arsenal fans were lapping it up as well, saying it gives them goosebumps. He gave this, like, massive speech about how this, like, medical team saved him in, like, a game against Norwich. It's like, you're not embarrassed to be pulling these moves in a game against Norwich. And the whole fan base, like, lapping it up as well, as if it's amazing. It's like, imagine if Brendan Rodgers did these things. You know, I know a clip that's going around this week is, like, where he's playing You'll Never Walk Alone during the training. It's like, imagine if that was Brendan Rodgers, like, why are they, like, lapping up this Arteta? It's just insane to me. Like, I can't wait to watch it all. But also, like, the full body cringe that I've got in the clips I've had so far, I don't know if I can get myself through it. It's just insane.
I think as well from, I was reminded of our one a bit when reading a few of the preview sort of articles about the first three episodes that I think are going to be released this week. And I was reminded that the problem with All or Nothings is that rival fans of the clubs who are being featured are sort of rubbing their hands together ahead of it being released. And then you quickly realise that the defeats are glossed over really, really quickly. And it's all just about, you know, it's all about learning and the club sort of pulling together in times of, you know, adversity. And they do their best to try and turn the manager into this sort of mythical figure like they are with Arteta. And maybe it won't actually be as fun as I'm hoping it will, but surely, surely, surely they can't gloss over the meltdown at the end.
My issue is I really do, like, I want to watch it because for the comedy, obviously, and to hate on them and to see that massive implosion at the end of the season. But I also don't want to like any of their players. My worry is I'll watch it.
Saka particularly, right? Because I read stuff today being like, there isn't a nicer man in football. He's so charming. And
Saka is definitely the biggest worry. I don't want to have any sort of positive feelings towards any of their players. Sorry, even Saka.
I think that's very fair. Yeah, I feel like I might just watch the last one just for the implosion, because the rest of it would just be a proper PR job about, you know, the fact that they're building this soon to be all conquering, you know, sort of incredibly likable super team, sort of headed up by this free thinking maverick. And I just can't stomach the Arteta stuff. I don't think I can watch like 10 hours of him rambling on being a Spanish David Brent. I cannot do it. Okay, next question, guys. Tell me your dream Champions League opponent. Tom, what's your dream opponent for this season?
Well, I will say Frankfurt, because they looked a hell of a lot of fun when playing West Ham and Rangers in the Europa last season. Their fans look amazing / terrifying. And for selfish reasons, I've also got friends in Frankfurt. So like trying to get a away trip there would be quite fun, I think.
I've been to a Frankfurt game before. A friend of mine's a big Eintracht fan, and we went over to watch them in a derby, and it was one of the more insane afternoons of my life. Their fans are bonkers. So the atmosphere at both our stadium and theirs would just be off the charts. So I think that's a good shout. And I also would probably do all right against them as well, so not too fearsome. I've picked PSG because I feel like, oh, Billy, have I nicked your one again? I feel like they're the sort of, maybe the last sort of European super team that we've not yet played in the Champions League that I can remember. And I think we could beat them as well. And I think it would be really fun to beat PSG. And also just, you know, having Mbappe and Neymar and everyone come to Tottenham would be fun as well. So those were mine. Billy, I'm really sorry that I stole your pick. What was your reason for picking PSG?
Yeah, mine was because we kind of saw Messi against Tottenham before, but we didn't see it in Tottenham. I'd love to see Messi actually in Tottenham.
I can't believe I just listed two PSG players and didn't mention the world's greatest player of all time.
I'd love to see him in Tottenham, but also, like, imagine like an away day, being able to get the Euro started an away day. That'd be fucking amazing. So yeah, I definitely want PSG for the same reason that you said, because we just haven't played them. We played like Bayern Munich, Dortmund, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Juventus, etc., but we just never seem to come against PSG. But the main reason is I'd just love to see Messi actually in Tottenham. Sort of imagine him being of once driven down Tottenham High Road would be great sort of thing to imagine. So yeah, definitely Messi in Tottenham would be my pick.
Rosa?
Yeah, Messi would be amazing. Like, seeing him at Wembley was definite. It was such a like bucket list moment. It was absolutely incredible. I have gone for Atletico because, again, they're a sort of really big team that we've just not played. So I feel like that would be really fun. I would also like to play Napoli. I think that'd be a lot of fun. And Marseille, I'd like to play, because I think it'd be nice to play like a proper French team with like a proper footballing history. And I feel like they've just not really been in Champions League much, and that feels like that would be fun.
Good picks. Yeah. Marseille and Napoli would be great. It'd be really, really good.
I feel like,
yeah, and I'd like to go to those away days. I don't think I would get to go, but you know, in theory,
I feel like
really
the police
fun.
Are hating you, Rosa, right now, because I think they'll seriously go off when it goes.
Yeah, we've named an awful lot of quite rowdy fan bases, haven't we? So apologies to North London's police forces. All right, let's go on to the next one. You can sign one more player for Tottenham this summer. Who do you, and I want some realistic people here, I'm not asking for Messi or Neymar's, who do you realistically sign for Spurs with the remaining time in the window? Billy, who are you picking?
I've gone on a kind of journey with Maddison this summer. Like I started off like hating him as a person, but now I've sort of, the more I think about the idea, I've started to think, you know, it'd be a really good signing. And now I'm kind of disappointed in the fact that it looks like it's not happening. I also kind of bear in mind the fact that Oli Skip looks like he's going to be injured for a few weeks. Another like freak injury. That guy just seems to be like the most unlucky player ever. Mm-hmm. I also think like Maddison could also kind of play in centre midfield as well as playing attacking midfield as well. So I've really like gone on a journey of sort of hating him to really wanting him. So definitely Maddison for me.
Okay. I'm worried you're going to be disappointed, but okay. Rosa?
I don't really have anyone. I'm really sorry. You know, I'm really bad with signings. I guess we need, you know, a creative midfielder and another central defender. And I just honestly couldn't think of anybody realistic. So I am willing to be persuaded by whatever you guys say, basically.
Okay. But one of those two positions you would like?
I think probably, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Unless we could suddenly magic up a successor to Hugo, that would also be a good thing to look into this season.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tom?
I can't believe I'm saying this because regular listeners will know my feelings about this club, but like Jared Bowen is like just a brilliant footballer, and I'm pissed off that we were linked with him for so long and didn't do the deal, and then he's come good at West Ham. He was absolutely brilliant last season and would certainly be an amazing player for the future and sort of an attacking mid that we might be missing. I'd totally take Maddison as well. And I think, look, if we're being realistic, I don't think West Ham would sell to us. But coming from left field, like suddenly putting a decent bid for him, he's brilliant, Bowen.
I don't know that his potential father-in-law would allow it either, right? Because he goes out with Danny Dyer's daughter,
Dyer. Yeah, I mean,
so it'd have two breakups to sort of deal with if he did move over here. But yeah, he would be great. There was talk Chelsea were in for him for a bit, wasn't there?
Yeah, but it would also be good to piss off Danny Dyer, wouldn't it? Like
that'd be nice.
That'd be great to have to just enrage a lot of West Ham fans, including Danny Dyer, Russell Brand, the lot of them.
James Corden.
James Corden, yeah.
Awful people.
They're the worst. What's happening with Declan Rice these days? I feel like wasn't somebody big supposed to come in for him, and it all seems to have gone a bit quiet.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be the summer that. I thought, yeah, he would. This would be the summer that Chelsea or Man United would go hard for him, but it seems like
nothing to have bothered. There's not been any noise at all, has there?
I mean, you could make a case for him being the most sort of best all-round central midfielder in the Premier League last season, I think. So they've done some pretty good business, West Ham. We won't stray into getting worried about West Ham again, because I think that they've got the Conference League to worry about as well, which is quite funny because that will torpedo their season, but not even in a very exciting way compared to our season. So that should hopefully derail them. I have talked myself into Lucas Paqueta, because I don't think we're going to get Maddison, and I feel like there's something about the Zaniolo deal, the Roma guy, that just makes me feel like it's not actually a thing, and it's just one of those transfer sagas that's been largely cooked up out of thin air. So maybe having another skillful Brazilian to help sort of pick stubborn locks in tight matches would be fun. He looks like he's a real box of tricks. And also another Brazilian pal for all our Brazilians, particularly Richarlison, because he then won't have to have someone cooing at him sort of constantly. Like I imagine he's getting a little bit bored with Lucas and Royale doing sort of their constant pigeon noises at him. So perhaps Paqueta is a bit more of a cerebral guy for Richarlison to hang out with. He's my pick. I don't know though, because it all feels, all these attacking mids that have been linked with, I just can't see any of them actually happening. But maybe that we'll get into transfers perhaps next week once we've seen how we actually play football for real. The next question, you can pick one song to accompany the pre-match hype video. And of course, there are actually about six pre-match hype videos at White Hart Lane, but this is like the main, say this is the main one just before the players come out. So which song is soundtracking the pre-kickoff video? Billy, what song did you want to play?
I actually don't think we should play any song. And I think like the fans for seeing "Oh, When the Spurs Come Marching In." Because I don't know if you remember that Ajax video in the Champions League when we were playing at home. I think it was one of the very first ever games at the new stadium. And like the atmosphere was absolutely insane. So I think, I know we've tried similar with Can't Smell About You, which is a song that I absolutely love. It's one of my all-time favourite songs. Obviously, it's very, very special to Tottenham. But it's not really like one that gets you like going. So I think if we just, rather than actually sit like put on an actual song, if we got the whole stadium singing that before the game as like a routine, I think that would get like fans, players, atmosphere up totally.
We was it one match they did Can't Smile Without You?
I think they did it like maybe two, a couple of home games
before kickoff, and it really just like sucked the life out of the stadium.
End of game song, isn't it? Like, which you sing hard at the end, but like it's not really one to like to rile up the crowd and stuff.
Guys, I'm going to shock you here. I don't really like it. and those couple of goals at the couple of games where they played it before the match, and it just doesn't do anything to hype up the crowd. It's kind of slow and mournful. And I think you're right, Billy. I'm up for hearing it after a match, but it doesn't do anything to get you hyped up. The tracks that they play, they've been seeming to play at the end of games, Claxon's Golden Scans and Ladbroke Grove by AJ Tracy. I'd happily hear them before the match.
Particularly, isn't Golden Scans, though, the song that we play when we've lost?
Yeah,
isn't that the one that comes on immediately?
That's kind of mournful. Yeah, I think that is when we lose. You're right, but I do like it.
I like it too. Yeah, I think we're off that age for sure.
Maybe we'll pick a different Claxon's track. What was the mashup they did with Rihanna at the Brits? It was one of the messiest Brits performances you've ever seen, where they pair two art. They don't really do it anymore, but at that point, they'd always pair two unlikely artists.
That would be a great song to play when we've lost.
Rihanna looking so confused in front of Claxon's in their fucking weird new rave gear. Anyway, sure they're lovely guys. I would happily rap along to Ladbroke Grove pre-match for sure. I think Ladbroke Grove's currently the one they play at halftime, isn't it?
I picked an AJ song as well. I picked False Nine, which I don't know if you remember, was released with the first Nike kit back in 2017. Yeah, 2017. And it was so good. It was really, really good. And I sort of feel like that would work perfectly. He name checks quite a few Spurs players. Unfortunately, it does, because it's now like 5 years old. I think Josh Onomar, Eriksson, he calls out Nathan Adua, who was a sort of...
Victor Wanyama, though. And Victor Wanyama's in that one, right?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I just know there's an AJ Tracy track from that era where he talks about Victor Wanyama that is very, very, that reference is very dear to my heart. So I feel like that's fine.
That's okay.
I'll pick that one.
We're basically just all picking AJ songs.
I think that works quite well. It's quite nice. Yeah, it's nice to have someone who's like proper coys.
Yeah. And maybe AJ, if you're listening, you could like do a new verse for False Nine or something that shouts out the new lot. And that could be our pre-match anthem. Cool. All right. Next question. Is the new away shirt the worst away shirt in Spurs history? If not, what is? Tom, you really hate it, don't you?
Yeah, I think it is probably joint with the brown one. Was the brown one an away shirt or was that the third?
I'll allow you to pick a third shirt, a sort of a chain shirt. You can pick if not.
I don't like the scuba vibe on the new away shirt. And they haven't launched the third yet, have they? Although there's lots of pictures in circulation.
No, not yet. Not yet.
And we were on a run of all right away shirts. But yeah, that's the scuba one's not great. So yeah, joint worst with the brown one from what would that have been, Martin Jol era?
Yeah, it was. I think that was for maybe our first European campaign in quite a long time. I seem to remember it was when we qualified for the UEFA League Cup, UEFA League, UEFA Cup.
I think I can picture Tom Huddleston in it.
Yeah, Teemu Taino, that kind of, that gen. I didn't mind the brown, but I'm clearly, as I'm going to talk about in a minute, I clearly like shirts that everyone else hates. Rosa, you're not a fan either, right, of the new one?
Yeah, I think it's pretty ugly. I mean, it's one of those things where I'll look at it long enough and it'll just sort of, I'll just think, oh, it'll sort of fade into nothingness after a while and I won't resent it so much. To be honest, I don't think I've ever resented a shirt as much as that one from a couple of years ago that was the home one, that just with the extra, with the blue, where it just looked like the printer had run out of ink.
The one we wore in the Champions League final.
Yeah, then looked horrible because of the white shorts.
That was weird. I didn't, I'm just going to
defend it.
Come to
that. That's fine.
I thought it looked fine. It looked more than fine if you wore it out and you were wearing non-navy blue shorts or white shorts. If you were just a civilian wearing it with trousers, I think it looked perfectly fine. Which is
a football shirt for elite athletes to wear.
I think, yeah, it looked, with the navy shorts, it looked like the players had really, really long legs and they'd sort of tuck their shirts in really high up. And
like
with the
old school footballers.
Yeah, and with the white shorts in Europe,
it was a war crime.
Principle of the kit.
Let's be honest. Yeah.
Sort of didn't make any sense. So yeah, I agree on balance. That kit was a bit of a disaster. I don't mind this one at all. I think the worst thing about this away shirt is that someone at Tottenham just decided to pick a shirt, because from my understanding, they get presented a range of options by Nike each year and they pick from those options. And someone at Spurs has just decided to pick from, or has picked a shirt that is basically just based on a template that all of the training shirts are being based on this year. So you can't really see it with our training shirts because they're all one color, but most of the Nike teams have exactly that sort of scuba collar, and then everything else is a different color. And that is what we've picked for our away shirt. So if you look at Barcelona's training stuff, for example, it's essentially our shirt, but with just some slightly different colors. So that's really annoying. But I don't know. I just think it works as a kit. I quite like the sort of fluoro. I like the socks. I think the players are fine in it. So, and I think I just hark back to the Under Armour years particularly, which were... it was the only era of Spurs shirt where I just did not buy anything. I just refused to own anything Under Armour at all. I just feel like Under Armour is a brand for game hunting Trump supporters and should not be worn by any normal people whatsoever. Apologies if anyone's listening that's wearing Under Armour stuff, but I just can't be dealing with it. So compared to anything that they put out for us, I think this is absolutely fine. I don't really get what all the fuss is about. Billy?
I think it's offensively bad, to be honest. An absolute offence, a war crime. And whoever designed it should be locked away and never seen again. But I do want to shout out the black training gear this year because it's fucking magnificent. And I know that could be well intrinsically linked to my love for Antonio Conte, and it's always him the one that's wearing it. But I absolutely love the training stuff, the black training stuff, like the black hoodie, the black tracksuit. I love it all. So I'm all in for the training gear this year.
I know people have been complaining though about the sponsor on the training gear, which is, I think the first season, the kind of retail versions have had the training sponsor on, which slightly spoil it. Pro tip though, and Rosa, definitely some for you, the women's gear doesn't have the sponsor on. So you can get all the cool sort of all black stuff, but without the Getir sponsor on. Female listeners or slim men who can get into the women's gear, go for your life. You can have that one for free. What pub are you most excited to get back into, everyone? Rosa, which pub are you excited to go to this season?
I think I've got two answers to this. One, I would like to finally make it to the Corner Pin because I don't think I've ever set foot in there. I know Tommy making that face, but I've never done it, so I feel like it'd be nice.
Tom, why don't you like it?
No, I don't mind it. The garden bits are right, and you can definitely get neck oil in the Corner Pin.
There you go.
You fucking hope so.
Yeah, exactly. It's their own pub. But yeah, it's all right. It's okay. We'll go for one in there on Saturday.
That'd be nice,
Rosa, for sure.
But also, because my brother went to see Gaga last week, and obviously he wasn't sure where he was sitting because he doesn't understand, he doesn't care about football, doesn't understand about football stadiums. So I was like, were you in the really big stand? So I think he was in the south stand. So, and if true, I'm fuming that he got there first. So this season ambition is I have to get to the south stand, I have to have a drink there, that's it.
That's mad that have you not even been round to the bar bit? Oh, wow.
Because I've just never really had time, I guess. And, you know, I thought I had all the time in the world. And now my little brother, who doesn't care about football, has actually been there first. So,
okay.
It's a disgrace.
We need to put this right very quickly. Maybe on Saturday, in fact.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to pick the Bluecoats because I thought it really came into its own last season, the Bluecoats. I feel like it was always the sort of right level of busy that had an atmosphere, but you could sort of squeeze in. Another pro tip, in fact, go upstairs. There's always room upstairs in the Bluecoats. Again, I don't know why I'm saying this out loud because people will now go upstairs and steal all the space. And there's a bar up there as well that very rarely has anyone at it. I also like the Bluecoats. It's one of those good pubs to watch games that are on before or after the Spurs match. I always feel like it's quite a sort of nice, rowdy atmosphere. It always tends to be like West Ham games that I've always caught in the Bluecoats, and it's usually a game in which they sort of manage to mess up or something. So I've always had a good time watching football after being away at Hart Lane at the Bluecoats. Food is always really good as well. If you're ever in Tottenham for an early game, in fact, the brunches at the Bluecoats, this is like the most middle class gentrified Spurs thing I've ever said, but the brunch at Bluecoats is so good. Promise I'm not being sponsored or provided free food by the Bluecoats, but exceptional. So for those 12:30 kickoffs, if you can get yourself to the Bluecoats, I'm going to stop talking now because it really does sound like this is some sort of paid for advert.
Bluecoats, should you wish to provide us with free food,
we would not say
no.
Absolutely fine. Our principal sponsors, the Bluecoats, on the high road, can't miss it. Billy, where do you want to go this season, mate?
So I am a total Tottenham Hellboy. I'm amazed that so many people get the train to Seven Sisters and walk from there when Tottenham Hell is literally just right there, and it's much better walk and seems to be much faster as well. And as you walk down to the stadium, there's like this pub called The Volunteer, which I know I spoke about on this podcast before, but it's like, I love it. It's like, it's kind of like quite quiet. So it's a good one to go to before you go to another pub closer to the ground, but you can get an actual drink in an actual glass and not have to wait like 20 minutes to get like a plastic cup of beer or something. So yeah, The Volunteer in Tottenham Hill. But I just want to like shout out Tottenham Hill. For me, it's a much better match day walk than going all the way from Seven Sisters, which is long.
It is long. I've never been to The Volunteer. Billy, you have to take us, please.
And also, it's the kind of pub which has a dog. And sadly, the pub dog died last year. It's actually really sad.
Oh.
I'm hoping this season they've got like a replacement pub dog because every pub needs a dog.
They'll have just recast the dog with a sort of new dog that looks a bit similar to the old dog, hopefully. Very sad. All right, we've all got sort of assignments for this year. Tom, did you give me your pub?
No, I didn't. I just want to mention I did enjoy some beers in the Bluecoats last season. Went quite a few times with you guys and it was good. But for some reason in the veggie burger...
Don't ruin our sponsorship potential. Stop right there.
They put bean sprouts in the, like, you know, like you on the top, you should get like whatever, gherkin and some cheese. The veggie burger has bean sprouts on the top. Otherwise, it's a good veggie burger. But if you're listening, the chef, please, tweak that. Anyway, I like the Beehive because it's got a great garden. Also a good place to watch games before our games or after. Just a good vibe, massive garden, can be a nightmare to get a beer. Oh, and last season I also rediscovered for the first time in so long, the Victoria, which is a tiny little Irish pub, does a brilliant Guinness. Everyone's Irish who works in there and they're all, the landlord's about 100 years old, but a lovely, lovely guy. So I'll try and get a Guinness or two in there as well.
Good picks, everyone. I also want to shout out quickly the High Cross because they also do really good food and the two guys that run it are really, really nice. And it's an excellent one just to sort of stop off and have a quick pint at before you go back to Seven Sisters, I always think, if the weather's okay. Right. Excellent picks. Final question. Will Spurs win something this year? Rosa, are we going to win something?
I don't want to be a downer, but I don't think we will. I think, I'm sorry. It doesn't matter to me, though. I feel like we'll challenge and it'll be so thrilling. And I'd rather do that and aim really big and still not get it than go for the League Cup. I'm sorry, I just don't really, maybe that's really, I don't know, entitled of me or whatever, but I love the whole just going for something really, really big, even if you don't really get it. So I don't think we will. But I think it'll still be thrilling. I think we'll have a great year.
Thrilling but crushing disappointment from Rosa. Tom, are we going to win something?
No, Ash isn't here, is he? So I'm going to channel Ash's confidence. That just reminds me that a year ago Ash was here going, I just hate all of our players. I still wish we'd got that on a t-shirt.
There's still time.
But I also feel like at other times Ash is the most confident person on the podcast and would be saying it with his chest that yes, we're going to win something.
What are we going to win, Tom? What competition are we going to win?
I think the league is, you know, after watching the, I didn't watch the Charity Shield. I just looked at the team sheets.
That was enough.
The Community Shield and the 2-11s and who was on the bench. And I think, how on earth is anyone going to get near City and Liverpool this season, really? So let's say the FA Cup. Why not?
All right. I'm going to say we're going to win the Champions League. I just think we are. I think that actually, thinking about it, largely because of City and Liverpool, and the fact that if we wanted to win, say, the FA Cup, you'd probably have to play one of those and one of Chelsea or Arsenal just to get through to the sodding final. I think it actually, and this is going to sound insane, but I think it might be easier to win the Champions League than any domestic competition this year for Tottenham. I think if we get a decent draw and then we get a bit of luck in the knockouts, have one of those sort of Liverpool City draws where they get like Porto in the quarters and then the sort of plucky team that has somehow made it, like some sort of middling German team that have somehow gotten the way to the semis or something, and then like pull a proper Conte performance against City in the final. I think actually the Champions League, we're going to win the Champions League. Billy, what are we going to win this season?
I think we're going to win the FA Cup. I think we're going to finish top four again, probably hopefully third, and have a really good season, and then the year after that, we're going to win the league.
Nice. I think we've all channeled Ash brilliantly there. Let's keep the predictions going. I want to talk about Southampton very briefly. I just want your predictions for our first game of the season. Tom, prediction for Southampton?
2-0. Obviously, Richarlison can't play, so, and I don't think he'll automatically start, so 2-0. Kulu to finally get that home goal, and I will go fucking mental when he does.
Yes, 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 yes. We all need that so much. That is what we have needed for ages. Kulusevski's first goal at the stadium. Rosa, prediction?
3-1. I think we'll concede. I think Kulu will get a goal as well. I think he might even get a brace.
Oh, are we conceding first?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, so a bit of adversity to overcome early doors.
That's how we do. That's how we do.
Very Tottenham. Billy, prediction?
I'm going to go 4-0, and I think Son's going to score a hat-trick. I think he's just going to carry on being the same ridiculous player that he was last season. He's going to score a hat-trick, and Kane's going to get a rare August goal as well.
I think we're going to win 4-2. I think it's going to be a bonkers game where we go behind twice before roaring back. Ivan Perisic is definitely scoring. Kulusevski scoring. And I think Kane's going to get a couple as well. And it would just be a real sort of heart attack, but ultimately very fun football match. That's Southampton taken care of. 4 victories predicted. Billy, you did make the ominous point earlier to us in our text group that our first 4 fixtures of the season? If you look at the corresponding fixtures last season, we lost all of them.
Yeah, if you swap Forest for Burnley, who obviously just been relegated and promoted. We lost all 4 of these, which I think is actually a good thing because we can gain ground on next season really quickly. But I don't think we'll lose. Well, we're not going to lose all 4 of them again. Famous last words. But it's just that Chelsea one, man. I just really hope we can actually. We lost them 4 times last season. four different occasions. I just hope we can get some kind of result there, even if it's like a boring 0-0 draw, I'll take it. But yeah. I think it's a good chance to, like, early doors, get some ground on last season. Because if we get some ground on last season and then build on it, we're going to, you know, we finished top four last season, so then the only way is up. So I think it's not actually as negative as it sounds. Hopefully it's just a good chance for us to put some points where we didn't get them last season, then who knows what could happen.
I am really enjoying the positivity. Let's stay positive. Rosa, let's talk a little bit about Spurs women, please, because obviously none of our players featured in the squad this summer at the Euros. However, I don't think that should stop us feeling really, really positive about the season that Spurs women are preparing for as we speak. It looks like we've made some really interesting, sort of positive, creative signings with more to come. It feels like a really, really, really thrilling time for us as a club to be investing more and more in women's football, right?
Yeah, the timing is absolutely perfect, really. And obviously it was a bummer to not have any Spurs players, particularly obviously Ash Neville, involved in the Euros triumph. Doesn't matter, you know, those blonde ponytails did it and we all love them for it in the end. Like, honestly, what an unbelievable game. What a great tournament, but what an unbelievable game. Like, beforehand, you know, talking to you about it and I was like, I'm freaking out. I don't want to play Germany. Why can't we play France? That's nicer. But you were right. It was much, much, much better, much more satisfying to do it against the old enemy, especially because they were so filthy. And just to do it in that way was so, so, so glorious.
Well, we're not supposed to win games like that, right? We are not programmed to watch an England team go in front, sort of scent glory, get pegged back. And also, when Germany did equalise, I thought we looked out on our arses at that point as well. Yeah, we looked so tired.
The second half was horrible to watch. To be honest, when that equaliser went in, I was like, there's only one way this there's two ways this game ends. They score the winner or it goes to penalties and they win. And I just couldn't have envisaged what really did happen, which was just like, you know, like, I know Tottenham I've watched Tottenham win things, obviously not for quite a long time, and we've had some amazing nights. I was like, oh my God, is this what it feels like to really win stuff, like win big stuff? I feel like I've sort of been on the verge of tears basically every day since, because it's been like, I don't know, like for me, like for all of us, I guess, but I feel very, very emotional about it. I don't really know if my daughters are going to ever really get into football or whether it'll just be a sort of thing that they go, oh, you know, mum and dad like that and we don't really care. But if they do, I just feel like this is just a perfect moment, because it just shows that football will be there for them if they want it. And that's such a, like, a magical feeling. And that's something that I definitely didn't feel as a kid. So that means a lot to me. And I think we're very lucky right now as well, because this has happened and Spurs have been in the top flight for a couple of seasons now. So we're really, like, properly established in it now. And the fact that, you know, we had that good, that run last season where we were even talking possible Champions League at one point. So it feels like it's such a good time to be a fan of the women's game. And it's a great time to have a Tottenham women's team. And you're right, we seem to have made a lot of good signings. So I was going through them today, because obviously we've had some outgoings and some sort of concerning ones as well. Like, the big worry was Maeve Clemeron leaving.
And Rachel Williams as well, who I loved.
Who has gone to United. Yeah. Did you know that? I didn't realise that until today. Like, I knew she'd left and I just thought, I don't know where, I thought she'd gone. But she went to United, which feels weird and disappointing. But we have signed two more forwards. So one who's come from Villa, like, let me just check it out. Yeah, Ramona Petzelberger. So there's her, and then Karczewska, who is a Polish striker. So she's a young girl. I think she's done quite well. So it feels like they're addressing the biggest concern of last season, which was
I think there's no goals. There's Beth England. Is it Beth England who's from Brighton? I think we signed as well.
No, Ellie Brazil. Is it Ellie
Brazil? Brazil. Yeah. I've literally got my countries mixed up.
Beth England is the one that
we're linked to. Yeah,
but I don't know if that's going to happen.
She was one of the few players that didn't get on at all during the tournament, was she? But
so that feels about right.
She's a Chelsea. But I saw that we were even talking about offering Chelsea a transfer fee, which, like, basically never ever happens. And I was thinking, like, come on, Daniel, you've got this 150 million, like, make a splash and
buy us a
Lioness.
Seriously, just do it. It's a bit weird. You know, then we've got Amy Turner, which is quite big news, I think. And is it her partner?
I think it's her fiancé.
Farid James. Yeah, so they were both at Orlando Pride together and they're rocking up together here, which is pretty cool.
Drew Spence as well.
Drew Spence will be big. So she came from Chelsea, so she's not played a lot over the last couple of years, but she's really experienced and will be someone that we need in midfield, because the midfield was sorted and has now sort of fallen apart a bit. So I think that they seem to have made, like, she sounds like she's going to be a really, really good signing in that position. So it feels like, yeah, they've made a lot of really good signings. And the first game of the season is at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and against Manchester United, which is going to be big and will be really thrilling, because you get to see, you know, my personal favourite player of the tournament, Alessia Russo. And my second favourite player of the tournament was Mary Earp. So I just feel like that's going to be... I'm really gutted I can't go, actually, because I'm doing something else that day. But I think it's going to be so buzzy. Like, honestly, I feel properly buzzing about Spurs women this year, like, as much as I do about the men, actually. I feel like now's the time. I feel... Even, you know, even if they don't necessarily improve on what's happened last season, it's all good stuff that's happening.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating, I think, to see how the success of the national team translates to people actually attending WSL games. I think that's the next level that has to be unlocked, right? It's people regularly going to watch women's WSL teams, and not just, I suppose, when, you know, the men's team sort of let them play in the proper stadiums and it becomes a bit of a, you know, nice day out. But if they can actually sort of improve substantially the attendances at, you know, the sort of smaller grounds that they play at regularly. And for us, that'll be at Leighton Orient this season, which I know has been reasonably controversial, because I feel like for a lot of people that lived out of London, certainly on Twitter, people have been saying to me that the Hive was a lot easier to get to and it's easier to park and things like that. Whereas, I mean, not massively for everyone, but that seems certainly a lot of people saying that to me, whereas it's a little bit trickier to get to that part of East London and, you know, it's a bit more fiddly. But I think it's a better stadium. It's a better football stadium. I think the Hive is not a terrific place to watch football at all. So I think playing at Orient will hopefully help the team. Season tickets are so cheap that, you know, you would hope that there'll be a wave of people that will want to go now. There'll be younger kids that will be, you know, asking their mum and dads to take them to the women's games where perhaps that wasn't happening before. So, yeah, it's all good things. And I think, you know, Rosa, you made the you made the really good point about the younger generation, but I was really just struck by, you know, friends of mine like you who have, you know, been massively into football just as much as any of my male friends over the years, and have had to, you know, endure sort of crappy comments from people assuming that you don't know as much, or, you know, being treated as the sort of token girl that's into football and all of this sort of bullshit that a lot of friends of mine who happen to be girls and happen to be into football have had to sort of put up with over the years. To for that sort of vindication that I hope you all felt on Sunday, I think, you know, is a huge thing. And, you know, there's all sorts of wonderful stuff that's come from England doing so well, but I just love the fact that it's just another sort of kind of one in the eye for the idiots that don't think girls can not just play football, but actually be into football as well. So yeah, a very exciting season ahead for everyone, I think.
Yeah, and I think for me, I haven't had a lot of that sort of, oh, why are you into football? You're a girl sort of stuff. What I have always found so frustrating is you get just the kind, when you're watching the women's game or talking about the women's game, you just get so many of the same old tedious comments. And like we've discussed this before, like the classic thing that comes up about, like, oh, the goalkeeping's really bad. Why don't they make the goal smaller? And just all... And things about, like, the quality of the game, that after a while, you just think, I can't have this conversation anymore. If you don't understand anything about the history of the women's game globally, but specifically in this country, and how it was like basically banned for years. And even if we're talking about something like the move to Leyton Orient, the pitch will be better. And it's like, you can't play proper, good, fluid attacking football on a bad pitch. Mm. So the quality, it's just always going to be worse if you don't have a proper pitch to play on. And I feel so pleased and, yes, vindicated, because they got a big stage. That final was at Wembley, huge, huge numbers, and they played amazing football. And I just feel like, I don't want to have this conversation anymore. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, if you don't want to watch it, that's fine. I don't care. But very like, I want to watch it. Lots of other people want to watch it. And I also, to be honest, I don't really understand why you wouldn't want to watch it, because I think the thing about football that sort of brings us all together, like over the world, is that if you like football, you just tend to just like watching it, whatever it is. Don't you feel like wherever you are, if there's a game on, you just end up watching it because you love the game and it doesn't really matter who's playing. You will just automatically get into it. And after about 5 minutes, you'll have picked a side.
Fingers crossed it's all looking quite good. And yeah, the signings continue, and you know, we've got a brilliant coach and all the pieces seem to be sort of getting there slowly but surely. Excellent. I enjoyed that. Thanks for chatting women's football, Rosa, so brilliantly as always. We've just got time for Billy to take us into your rolling in the tweets for this week.
Yeah, man. So we kind of asked, like, obviously we're all buzzing as it came through earlier, but we asked people like what they're looking forward to about Saturday, specifically not the game itself, like the other things that surround it. And reading these has got me proper like up for Saturday. It's literally all I can think about at the moment. It's getting to that Saturday, 3 o'clock. And on that note, Sean Yusuf Makia said, a Saturday 3 p.m. home fixture. It's been years. It's actually been since the Son wonder goal against Burnley. It was the last time that we had a Saturday 3 o'clock.
Insane.
Which is insane. And he says, nothing beats it, especially on the season opener. And I totally agree. And I just can't wait to be back there on a Saturday at 3 o'clock and other actual games are playing. And we're not like the only team in the country that's playing. So there's like none of that stuff, like checking the scores and stuff like that. So I totally agree there, Sean. Tim says, I can't make the first game of the season, but I'm excited for that frustration of trying to airplay a dodgy stream to my TV, then getting phone notifications about all the important moments just before I've seen them happen on my screen, but it has a 2-minute lag. We've all been there, brother. We have all been there.
I think one day we're gonna need to do a special about the experience of streaming a football match, and that specific experience of when you know a goal is about to happen and you feel like you're sort of caught in some like space-time continuum, and you're like waiting for the thing to happen. It's a bit like watching, you know, when you watch like Casualty and you know that someone's going to get injured and you have to sort of work backwards and figure out how they're going to get injured. It's a bit like that, watching a Spurs thing. And it's obviously doubly worse. Well, it's not doubly worse. It's just terrible when you know Spurs have conceded. And that's the sort of Casualty comparison where you're like, who's going to make the fatal error here to ensure that we can see the goal?
Me and my brother have to do this like phone amnesty when we're watching a game together on a stream, because we both know that we can't do it without checking our phones. So we like donate our phones to my dad and like just say, don't tell us anything. We'll just watch it live. But yeah, 100%. I kind of experienced all that stuff from like watching the friendlies as well this year. Like, because it's the first time watching a stream in a while, and like, it's awful, isn't it? It's absolutely awful.
My Now TV is always so, and in fact BT, both of them are always so far behind, that I have actually been in the stadium and my phone has vibrated in my pocket and I've thought, oh shit, there's going to be a goal. And I'm like, no, I'm fucking here.
Like, same, Tom, exact same.
It's mental. But like, my phone's going off and I'm like, something bad's going to happen. Oh no, I'm watching it live. It's fucking mental.
The Quilkin says, I'm looking forward to seeing the friends I've missed over summer. Old faces, maybe even some new faces, and necking off with every single one of them.
Yeah.
I think if we win the league, we're all going to be doing that all the time. Everyone's going to be necking with everyone. So bring that on. Friend of the show, Tottenham Simpson, says, I'll be with my 9-year-old boy. We are not going to the match, but we'll be able to explain the anticipation, the excitement and the hope to him. Only for Spurs to ruin it by imploding. Don't worry, they're not going to do that this time. Trust me. David says, pretty excited that Gary Doherty is in town for a youth football camp and is going to watch the match with our sports group. Man, you have to let us know how that goes, because watching a game with Gary Doherty sounds like amazing. Definitely.
That sounds wicked. Yeah, we want a full report on that, please.
Preferably with pictures as well. That'd be great. Holly says, going back to the lane and having a drink before the game with friends and shouting Antonio. Yeah, you know my feelings for that man. Can't wait to do the same. Danny says, heading down to Philadelphia Spurs from Ottawa Spurs. It's an 8-hour drive, border crossing, but the cheesesteaks are worth it, man. They sound like some insane level cheesesteaks. If you're driving 8 hours for them cheesesteaks, man, you need to tell us.
And also, like, in the middle of the night, I presume, as well, because we're talking the time difference here. That means an 8-hour drive. I need to do the maths here, but to get there for kickoff would mean, yeah, extraordinary levels of dedication. I mean,
we definitely need like a full review of those cheesesteaks, Danny. Like, if you're driving that far for them, then they must be pretty fucking
special. Danny, if you are listening to this, and we'll reach out on Twitter as well, but if you could do us a little sort of voice note just detailing sort of how treacherous or otherwise your journey down to Philadelphia was, and then your experience of the day. We would love to hear that. That sounds excellent. And also, obviously, as Billy says, your cheesesteak review as well. And a recommendation, because Philadelphia is full of good cheesesteaks. So I want to know the best one.
Definitely. Cody says, just excited to see universal happiness at the return of football. Universal happiness. How long have you been a Spurs fan? Have you ever seen universal happiness in your life? Because I definitely have not.
Come on, Cody.
Even if we're winning, there's always some people complaining that sort of, and that's just what we do. I like the photos people post from the stadium. For someone separated from the club by an ocean, it brings me a little closer. Just a moment. That is really nice. Three at the back says, the early train to London and the closest spoons for an hour or two, and eventually squeeze into the Bricklayers to soak up some more drinks and atmosphere, and on to kick off. And Patrick says, I'm very excited to go to White Hart Lane for the very first time. Last time I watched Spurs in the Premier League, we were playing in Wembley. Jay Hassam says, and I've not actually been to this place, but I've heard good things. Wing Lab on the high roads. Looking forward to that. And Craig says, looking forward to seeing friends, what's changed on the high road and how much the match day parking costs. The thing about the high road is, however much it changes, it never really changes. Let's be honest. Tottenham High Road is always Tottenham High Roads. And Lost Lily White says, cheering on the team from Southeast Essex, just happy to have the season back. And that's exactly what we're all feeling, Lost Lily White. So up the Spurs.
Very nicely done. And thank you, our wonderful listeners. That was a really sort of heartwarming selection of replies that, has got me really, really excited about the season. Culturally, what's exciting you for? You four, I am one of the four. You three and me equals four. I have been excited by Gemini Wright, an album by Steve Lacy, who I would thoroughly recommend everyone listen to. Sort of R&B soul, sort of free spirit. It's really, really, really good. Sort of went under the radar a bit, came out a few weeks ago. And I thought Steve Lacy was sort of the coming man of that sort of soul R&B kind of oeuvre, but seems to have escaped a lot of notice, but it's really, really, really good. So listen to that. Tom, what have you been doing culturally this week?
You're not the first person to recommend that Steve Lacy album to me, so that's reminded me to go and listen. And I've mostly been consuming old things, like there's this singer Nina Simone, she's great.
Sound of the Summer.
Sound of the Summer. Honestly, it's the sound of this sweaty summer in London, really. Like, her voice and the kind of jazz style really suits this humid fucking weather we're having. It's horrible. Anyway, was just going to recommend, there's a producer called Mall Grab, who I read is Australian but based here in London, and his album is coming out this Friday, the 5th, if you're listening later, 5th of August. And it features Brendan Yates, who's the guy from Turnstile, who we've talked about the other day, who are kind of quite a heavy hardcore band. And DWE and Novelist are also on a track on that album. It's just like really quite cool electronic stuff. There's like 5 tracks out already. The album's out soon. I'm excited to hear what the whole thing sounds like.
Good. Sounds brilliant. Thanks, mate. Rosa, your pick, please.
Since it is the long, long school summer holidays, I took the kids to Tate Modern last week to go to the Yayoi Kusama sort of installation in the Turbine Hall.
How was it? Was it good?
Oh my God, it's amazing. So for people who don't know, it was like, it's this space. It's like four different rooms, I think. It's like a living room, a dining room, bedroom, playroom. And it originally started out white, and you go in and you get a sticker sheet as you go in. And it's just for kids, basically. So you can just put stickers wherever you want. And it's just, it's supposed to be running for like however long. And I went there on Monday, it was like day 3, and it was already, there were just stickers everywhere. But it is just, my kids absolutely loved it so much. So the younger one had an absolute meltdown when we had to leave. So it was like super fun and also really embarrassing in that way that happens when you've got a kid who just will not stop screaming. But I really recommend it. The queues are actually fine, even though it's school holidays, and it's just, you know, and then you're in Tate Modern as well, which is extremely fun. I've also just been listening to the new Maluma album, which is called, what's it called? Like the Love and Sex Tape or something hilarious. So, you know, I don't want to get into all kind of, oh, it's, you know, Latin is the, you know, so it's summer, so I have to listen to something Latin, but it kind of is. So that's really fun. I also just finished a novel by Charlotte Mendelssohn called The Exhibitionist, which is about a family where the parents are both artists and he is not successful anymore and she is successful and he is an absolute monster of a man. Reading it was honestly like watching a horror movie. It was like in a sort of good way, but also it was like unbelievably tense. Just at every turn, I was like, something absolutely terrible is going to happen, which I imagine is quite an accurate portrayal of what it feels like to live with someone that unpleasant. So I don't know. So if you kind of want to have a really stressful reading experience, go for it. Like it's brilliant, but it was also like really, really kind of, yeah, frightening, I guess. So genuinely like a horror movie. So yeah, that's that from me.
Rosie, you took us on a journey there. Thank you very much.
Yeah, like joy, grief, terror. Just
like, we're supposed to cover that in the Spurs bit of this podcast. Billy, round us off, please.
Yeah, I've watched two things this week. One I've binned off, one I really like. The one I've binned off is Paper Girls, which has been described by reviewers as better than Stranger Things. And it's like early indication that it's definitely not. If anyone actually watched that and it's worth watching, please let me know, because I've like binned it off after an episode and a half. But it's like 80s superhero kids. So it's getting a lot of Stranger Things comparisons. And quite a few reviews say it's better, but no, not for me. But the one I've been really liking is Midnight Mass on Netflix, which I know, like, on the Mark Mode and Simon Mayo podcast, they're doing like a watching at the moment, making everyone watch it. And it's, yeah, it's fucking brilliant. It's kind of by Mike Flanagan, but it's not really very horror-y if you're into horror. It's not really out and out horror, but it's like a bit creepy. Takes like three episodes before you actually find out what's going on. But when you do find out what's going on, it's really good. Yeah, so I've been loving Midnight Mass. I've got like two episodes to go, which I'm going to watch tonight. So yeah. But binned off Paper Girls. But if anyone watches that and it's worth watching, let me know.
Excellent. Nice stuff, everyone. Thank you very much. Loved your company as always. Thanks for going through those 10 questions. Loved hearing our listeners give us what they're excited about for the season. We can't wait. We're thrilled to be back, as we said last week. That was episode 2 of season 2 of Hometown Glory. Thank you very much. Billy, see us off.
Guys, Saturday, 3 o'clock, it's actually happening. We're playing on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. Up the Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.